You're with Cape Talk.
Okay, to Dr. Greg Mills we go now, director of the Brenthurst Foundation, a man who spent a lot of time in Ukraine, I think his fifth trip, and is just back. Greg, a very good afternoon. How are you doing?
Yeah, good afternoon. Very well, thank you.
All right, how is Ukraine these days? And is it easy enough just on a functional level to travel in and travel out?
The short answer is no. It's a long journey because you go by Warsaw, so it's at least sort of 6-7 hours from Warsaw to the border, and then, you know, depending on how much chutzpah you've got, it can take, there's a 45-kilometer queue across to the border, so it can take you a very long time, or you can wangle your way to the front and get through reasonably quickly. But it's a slow journey, and the journey in Ukraine is punctuated by many police and military roadblocks, as you would expect.
So it's by road. The journey's by road. You're not by rail. Nobody's flying into Kyiv or anything like that?
No, no one's flying at all. Of course, only the air forces are flying. You can take a train. A lot of people do take trains, but they tend not to have the flexibility of taking a car. So every time I've gone in by road.
I presume you have to pay a fairly hefty insurance whack if you're renting a car and taking it into Ukraine.
It comes with the driver. So,
okay.
I can't imagine it unless you're fairly high. Yeah.
Okay. What's your observation from the last trip compared to previous ones? How do you think things are going?
Well, as you mentioned, this is my fifth trip. I made the mistake of trying to go to Ukraine on the 23rd of February, and the next day, of course, there was war. So that was pretty abbreviated. What's changed between this trip, which I got back from a week ago, and the last one before that, which was to Odessa in July, is the Ukrainians have become much better organized. Their fuel suppliers, their general, you know, sense of purpose, the sense of organization around the cities is noticeably different. And of course, I was there at the time that their push on Kharkiv in the northeast was very successful. So they're feeling fairly buoyant. I mean, it's got a very long way to go. And of course, you know, the most formidable general of all, General Winter, is about to set in, and that's going to make the going very hard. But the Ukrainians are confident, and they have now the military results to back that up. And since I was there, of course, they made further advances in the east. They captured the strategic town of Lyman, which is, of course, a crossroads for resupply, and they've made some progress in the south as well, which, of course, was there. They were trying to push on both fronts simultaneously, and Kharkiv more or less gave way in the north. So the Russians are having a tough time of it, which is why Putin has announced this partial mobilization, and which is why he's going around trying to, you know, occasionally talk about a ceasefire, which has given him an opportunity to lick his wounds. But I don't think anyone's buying that right at the moment.
What is the sentiment towards negotiation? Is there a notion we're going to win it all, or is there a feeling underneath that at some point the Ukrainians are going to have to do a deal?
Well, of course, all wars end by negotiation, all military defeat. So, you know, you have an unconditional surrender that happened, of course, at the end of the Second World War. But that's very unusual. What the Ukrainians were talking about when I first went, in fact, in the first three trips, was always about the pre-24th of February borders. In other words, you know, the bits of the east and Crimea would remain really a sort of subject for debate, and that possibly would be where they would draw the borders. Now nobody's talking about that. They're talking about recapturing everything.
Including
Crimea, including me. I think that Zelensky, because of course he is democratically elected, would find it very hard to sell another story to Ukrainians right now. They want their territory back. And I think, if anything, these referenda, as dodgy as they were, have actually made Ukrainians generally more determined rather than less.
You mentioned General Winter, that famous notion about freezing weather in Eastern Europe turning the tide. I wonder who General Winter works for now. Initially, the assumption was the Russians, but given that the Russians are on the back foot, might not Winter make it worse for them than the Ukrainians?
Well, if they get a battle with resupply, which they certainly seem to be, and that's going to be a big issue down south, because essentially what you have in in the south is about 20 to 25,000 Russian troops on the western bank of the Dnieper River. And the Ukrainians can block them off at any time. Now, they've already knocked down the major arterial bridges, and essentially they're letting the Russians run on pontoon bridges, and they can pretty much close those down with these new HIMARS and even with conventional artillery. So I think you're going to see them take a pounding, and possibly take a pounding absent any resupply, and that's going to make life very tough for them. And you know, we can't forget that, you know, people always ask me, who's going to win? And I would pretty much give the same answer, which is, I believe it's going to be the Ukrainians, because they're fighting on their own territory. They're fighting for something. They're not fighting in somebody else's land. And resupply is not the same issue for them as it's now becoming for the Russians. And what is increasingly going to become, I believe, a very unpopular war in Russia. I visited in Kiev the last time. I was with Bobby Wine and Zeke Kabwe, two very well-known African politicians, and Bobby recorded a couple of songs when he was in Ukraine, which was certainly something very different. But we also visited the Afghan memorial. So that's the Soviet soldiers who lost their lives in Afghanistan in the 1980s. And you forget that was 14,800 people. And already, it's the sort of lowest estimate of the Russian losses at probably 2 to 3 times that number.
Dr. Greg Mills, thank you very much. I'm sorry about the poor line quality there. I hope you could pick up what he was saying. It was important stuff, his assessment that ultimately the war has to end by negotiation, because most wars do. Most wars don't end in total collapse or surrender. There's an element of negotiation. But on balance, who's going to win? And he's always said the Ukrainians, because they're fighting for their territory. They're not invaders. They're more passionate. They're more committed. And that's his basic assessment. And that there is much more optimism in Kiev and surrounding areas than there was the last time he was there, with good reason. There is a distinct sense that the tide has turned over the last couple of months. Whether it's turned for good and it might turn back against the Ukrainians at various points, we shall see. But they've been very, very significant developments. And just keep following these little victories, Lyman and then the one in the south over the Dnipro River that Reuters have been covering. Just each day, significant developments, territory regained, Russian troops encircled, Russian troops having to retreat. No forces like to retreat. It's never something you can do in a measured, managed way and keep control of your morale and your emotions and all your munitions. You leave stuff behind. Retreat usually means chaos, and it means demoralization. So at the moment, the tide is in one clear direction. Doesn't mean it will always flow that way. And Greg was making the point that in winter, it'll be harder to mount offensives, and that might give the Russians a chance to train these mobilized troops and to replenish the supplies of forces, especially in the south, that are now coming under pressure. But significant times in Ukraine, very significant times indeed.